Hello, everyone. We are continuing on with Thomas Watson and the Ten Commandments. And last time, we finished the fourth commandment. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work. But the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou nor thy son, nor thy daughter, thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. And that was Exodus 20, verses 8 to 11. And Lord willing, here we're going to go on to the fifth commandment. And so we'll go ahead and start that. The fifth commandment, honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Exodus 20, verse 12. Having done with the first table, so it's the first table of the Ten Commandments, which are usually thought of as commandments 1 through 4 regarding God, and then the second table usually regards our behavior toward man. Having done with the first table, I am next to speak of the duties of the second table. The commandments may be likened to Jacob's ladder. The first table respects God and is the top of the ladder that reaches to heaven. The second respects superiors and inferiors and is the foot of the ladder that rests on the earth. By the first table, we walk religiously toward God. By the second, we walk religiously toward man. He cannot be good in the first table that is bad in the second. Honor thy father and thy mother. In this we have a command, honor thy father and thy mother, and second, a reason for it, that thy days may be long in the land. The command will chiefly be considered here, honor thy father. Number one, father is of different kinds, as the political, the ancient, the spiritual, the domestic, and the natural. Number one, the political father, or the magistrate. He is the father of his country. He is to be an encourager of virtue, a punisher of vice, and a father to the widow and orphan. Such a father was Job. I was a father to the poor, and the cause which I knew not, I searched out. Job 29:16. As magistrates are fathers, so especially the king, who is head of magistrates, is a political father. He is placed as the sun, S-U-N, among the lesser stars. The scripture calls kings fathers. King shall be thy nursing fathers, Isaiah 49:23. They are to train up their subjects in piety by good edicts and examples, and nurse them up in peace and plenty. Such nursing fathers were David, Hezekiah, Josiah, Constantine, and Theodosius. It is well for a people to have such nursing fathers whose breasts milk comfort to the children. These fathers are to be honored for, number one, their place deserves honor. God has set these political fathers to preserve order and harmony in a nation and to prevent those state convulsions which otherwise might ensue. When there was no king in Israel, every man did that which was right in his own eyes, Judges 17:6. It is a wonder that locusts have no king, yet they go forth by bands. Number two, God has promoted kings that they may promote justice. As they have a sword in their hand to signify their power, so they have a scepter, an emblem of justice. It is said of the emperor Marcus Aurelius that he allotted 1 hour of the day to hear the complaints of those that were oppressed. Kings place judges as cherubims about the throne for a distribution of justice. These political fathers are to be honored. Honor the king, 1 Peter 2:17. This honor is to be shown by a civil respect to their persons and a cheerful submission to their laws, so far as they agree and run parallel with God's laws. Kings are to be prayed for, which is a part of the honor we give them. I exhort that supplications, prayers, intercessions be made for kings that we may lead a quiet, peaceable life in all godliness and honesty. 1 Timothy 2, verse 1. We are to pray for kings that God would honor them to be blessings, that under them we may enjoy the gospel of peace and the peace of the gospel. How happy was the reign of Numa Pompilius when swords were beaten into plowshares and bees made hives of the soldiers' helmets. So that was number one, the political father. Number two, there is the grave ancient father who is venerable for old age, grave as in serious, I guess, whose gray hairs are resembled to the white flowers of the almond tree, Ecclesiastes 12, verse 5. There are fathers for seniority on whose wrinkled brows and in the furrows of their cheeks is pictured the map of old age. These fathers are to be honored. Thou shalt rise up before the holy head and honor the face of the old man, Leviticus 19:32. Especially those are to be honored who are fathers not only for their seniority, but for their piety, whose souls are flourishing when their bodies are decaying. It is a blessed sight to see springs of grace in the autumn of old age, to see men stooping toward the grave, yet going up the hill of God, to see them lose their color, yet keep their savor. They whose silver hairs are crowned with righteousness are worthy of double honor. They are to be honored not only as pieces of antiquity, but as patterns of virtue. If you see an old man fearing God, whose grace shines brightest when the sun, S-U-N, of his life is setting, oh, honor him as a father by reverencing and imitating him. Number three, there are spiritual fathers as pastors and ministers. These are instruments of the new birth. Though ye have 10,000 instructors, yet have ye not many fathers, for in Christ Jesus I have begotten you through the gospel, 1 Corinthians 4:15. The spiritual fathers are to be honored in respect of their office. Whatever their persons are, their office is honorable. They are the messengers of the Lord of hosts, Malachi 2:7. They represent no less than God himself. Now then we are ambassadors for Christ, 2 Corinthians 5, verse 20. Jesus Christ was of this calling. He had his mission and sanction from heaven, and this crowns the ministerial calling with honor, John 8:18. These spiritual fathers are to be honored for their work's sake. They come like a dove with an olive branch in the mouth. They preach glad tidings of peace. Their work is to save souls. Other callings have only to do with men's bodies or estates, but the minister's calling is employed about the souls of men. Their work is to redeem spiritual captives and turn men from the power of Satan unto God, Acts 26:18. Their work is to enlighten them who sit in the region of darkness and make them shine as stars in the kingdom of heaven. These spiritual fathers are to be honored for their work's sake, and this honor is to be shown three ways. Number one, by giving them respect. Know them which labor among you and are over you in the Lord, and esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake, 1 Thessalonians 5:12 and 13. I confess the scandalous lives of some ministers have been a great reproach and have made the offering of the Lord to be abhorred in some places of the land. The leper in the law was to have his lip covered, so such as are angels by office, but lepers in their lives ought to have their lips covered and to be silenced. But though some deserve no honor, yet such as are faithful and make it their work to bring souls to Christ are to be reverenced as spiritual fathers. Obadiah honored the prophet Elijah, 1 Kings 18, verse 7. Why did God reckon the tribe of Levi for the firstborn, Numbers 3:13? Why did he appoint that the prince should ask counsel of God by the priest, Numbers 27:21? Why did the Lord show, by that miracle of Aaron's rod flourishing, that he had chosen the tribe of Levi to minister before him, Numbers 17. Why does Christ call his apostles the lights of the world? Why does he say to all his ministers, "Lo, I am with you to the end of the world"? But because he would have these spiritual fathers reverenced. In ancient times, the Egyptians chose their kings out of their priests. They are far from showing this respect and honor to their spiritual fathers, who have slight thoughts of such as have the charge of the sanctuary and do minister before the Lord. Know them, says the apostle, which labor among you. Many can be content to know their ministers in their infirmities and are glad when they have anything against them, but do not know them in the apostle's sense so as to give them double honor. Surely, were it not for the ministry, you would not be a vineyard, but a desert. Were it not for the ministry, you would be destitute of two seals of the covenant, baptism and the Lord's Supper. You would be infidels, for faith comes by hearing, and how shall they hear without a preacher? Romans 10, verse 14. Second way, honor the spiritual fathers by becoming advocates for them and wiping off those slanders and calumnies which are unjustly cast upon them, 1 Timothy 5:19. Constantine was a great honorer of the ministry. He vindicated them. He would not read the envious accusations brought against them, but burnt them. Do the ministers open their mouths to God for you in prayer, and will you not open your mouths in their behalf? Surely, if they labor to preserve you from hell, you should preserve them from slander. If they labor to save your souls, you ought to save their credit. Number three, honor them by conforming to their doctrine. The greatest honor you can put upon your spiritual fathers is to believe and obey their doctrine. He is an honorer of the ministry who is not only a hearer, but a follower of the word. As disobedience reproaches the ministry, so obedience honors it. The apostle calls the Thessalonians his crown. What is our crown of rejoicing? Are not ye? 1 Thessalonians 2:19. A thriving people are a minister's crown. When there is a metamorphosis, a change wrought, when people come to the word proud, but go away humble, when they come earthly, but they go away heavenly, when they come as Naaman to Jordan, lepers, but they go away healed, then the ministry is honored. Need we, as some others, epistles of commendation? 2 Corinthians 3, verse 1. Though other ministers might need letters of commendation, yet Paul needed none, for when men heard of the obedience wrought in these Corinthians by Paul's preaching, it would be a sufficient certificate that God had blessed his labors. The Corinthians were a sufficient honor to him. They were his letters testimonial. You cannot honor your spiritual fathers more than by thriving under their ministry and living upon the sermons which they preach. Number four, so that was the third type of father. So number four, there is the domestic father, that is the master. He is the father of the family. Therefore, Naaman's servants called their master father, 2 Kings 5:13. The centurion calls his servant son, Matthew 8, verse 6, in the Greek anyway. The servant is to honor his master as the father of the family. Though the master be not so qualified as he should be, yet the servant must not neglect his duty, but show some kind of honor to him. Number one, in obeying his master in things that are lawful and honest. Servants, be subject to your masters, not only in the good and gentle, but also to the froward, or to the good and gentle, but also to the froward. 1 Peter 2:18. God has nowhere given a charter of exemption to free you from your duty. You cannot disobey your earthly master, but you disobey your master in heaven. Think not that birth or high parts, no, nor even grace will exempt you from obedience to your master. To obey him is an ordinance of God, and an apostle says, they that resist the ordinance shall receive to themselves damnation. Romans 13, verse 2. Number two, the servant's honoring his master is seen in being diligent in his service. Apelles painted a servant with his hands full of tools as an emblem of diligence. The loitering servant is a kind of thief who, though he does not steal his master's goods, steals the time which he should have been employed in his master's service. The slothful servant is called a wicked servant, Matthew 25, 26. Number three, the servant is to honor his master by being faithful. Who then is a faithful and wise servant, Matthew 24, 45? Faithfulness is the chief thing in a servant. Faithfulness in a servant is seen in six things. Number one, in tenaciousness, in concealing the secrets the master has entrusted you with. If those secrets are not sins, you ought not to betray them. What is whispered in your ear, you are not to publish on the housetop. Servants who do this are spies. Who would keep a glass that is crackled? Who would keep a servant that has a crack in his brain and cannot keep a secret? Number two, faithfulness in a servant is seen in designing the master's advantage. A faithful servant esteems his master's goods as his own. Such a servant had Abraham, who, when his master sent him to transact business for him, was as careful about it as if he had been his own. O Lord God of my master Abraham, I pray thee send me good speed this day and show kindness unto my master Abraham. Genesis 24:12. Doubtless Abraham's servant was as glad he had got a wife for his master's son as if he had got a wife for himself. Number three, faithfulness in a servant is seen in standing up for the honor of his master. When he hears him spoken against, he vindicates him. As the master is careful of the servant's body, so the servant should be careful of the master's name. When the master is unjustly reproached, the servant cannot be excused if he be possessed with a dumb devil, so to speak. Number four, faithfulness is when a servant is true to his word. He dares not tell a lie, but will speak the truth, though it be against himself. A lie doubles the sin. He that telleth lies shall not tarry in my sight. Psalm 101:7. A liar is near akin to the devil. John 8:44. And who would let any of the devil's kindred live with him? The lie that Gehazi told his master Elisha entailed leprosy on Gehazi and his seed forever. 2 Kings 5:27. In a faithful servant, the tongue is the true index of the heart. Number five, faithfulness is when a servant is against impropriation. He dares not convert his master's goods to his own use, not purloining, Titus 2:10. What a servant filches from his master is damnable gain. He who enriches himself by stealing from his master stuffs his pillow with thorns on which his head will lie very uneasy when he comes to die. Number six, faithfulness consists in preserving the master's person if unjustly in danger. Bannister betrayed his master, the Duke of Buckingham, in King Richard III's reign, and the judgments of God fell upon the traitorous servant. His eldest son became mad. His daughter, of a singular beauty, was suddenly struck with leprosy. His younger son was drowned, and he himself was arraigned, and who would have been executed had he not been saved by his clergy. That servant who is not true to his master will never be true to God or his own soul. All right, that was the end of point three, a servant honoring his master. Point four, the servant is to honor his master by serving him as with love, so with silence, that is, without repining and without replying. Exhort servants to be obedient unto their own masters, not answering again, Titus 2:9. In the Greek, not giving cross answers. Some servants who are slow at work are quick at speech, and instead of being sorry for a fault, provoked by unbecoming language. Were the heart more humble, the tongue would be more silent. The apostle's words are, not answering again, to those servants who honor their masters or family fathers by submission, diligence, faithfulness, love, and humble silence, great encouragement is given. Servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service, knowing that of the Lord ye shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for ye serve the Lord Christ. Colossians 3:22-24. In serving your masters, you serve Christ, and he will not let you lose your labor. You shall receive the reward of the inheritance. From serving on earth, you shall be taken up to reign in heaven and shall sit with Christ upon his throne. Revelation 3:21. Having shown how servants are to honor their masters, I shall next show how masters are to conduct themselves toward their servants so as to be honored by them. In general, masters must remember that they have a master in heaven who will call them to account, knowing that your master also is in heaven, Ephesians 6:9. More particularly, number one, masters must take care to provide for their servants. As they appoint them work, so they must give them their meat in due season, Luke 17:7. They should see that the food be wholesome and sufficient. It is most unworthy of some governors of families to lay out so much upon their own back as to pinch their servants' bellies. Number two, masters should encourage their servants in their work by commending them when they do well. Though a master is to tell a servant of his faults, yet he is not always to beat on one string, but sometimes to take notice of that which is praiseworthy. This makes a servant more cheerful in his work and gains the master the love from his servant. Number three, masters must not overburden their servants, but proportion their work to their strength. They must not lay too much load on their servants to make them faint under it. Christianity teaches compassion. Number four, masters must seek the spiritual good of their servants. They must be seraphims to kindle their love to religion. They must be monitors to put them in mind of their souls. They must bring them to the pool of the sanctuary to wait till the angels stir the waters, John 5, verse 4. They must seek God for them, that their servants may be his servants, and must allow them time convenient for secret devotion. Some are cruel to the souls of their servants. They expect them to do the work about the house, but abridge them of the time they should employ in working out their salvation. Number five, masters should be mild and gentle in their behavior toward their servants, forbearing threatening, Ephesians 6, verse 9. Thou shalt not rule over him with rigor, but shall fear thy God, Leviticus 25:43. It requires wisdom in a master to know how to keep up his authority and yet avoid austerity. We have a good copy to write after our master in heaven, who is slow to anger and of great mercy, Psalm 145, verse 8. Some masters are so harsh and implacable that they are enough to spoil a good servant. Number six, be very exact and punctual in the agreements you make with your servants. Do not prevaricate, keep not back any of their wages, nor deal deceitfully with them, as Laban did with Jacob, changing his wages, Genesis 31:7. Falseness in promise is as bad as false weights, or when you're measuring out using false weights to make a payment for something on a scale. Number seven, be careful of your servants, not only in health, but in sickness. If they have become sick while in your service, use what means you can for their recovery, and be not like the Amalekite who forsook his servant when he was sick, but be as the good centurion who kept his sick servant and sought to Christ for a cure, 1 Samuel 30:13 and Matthew 8, verse 6. If you have a beast that falls sick, you will not turn it off, but have it looked to and pay for its cure. And will you be kinder to your horses than to your servants? Thus should masters carry themselves prudently and piously, that they may gain honor from their servants and may give up their accounts to God with joy. And that was the end of the master-servant father. And number five, there's the natural father, the father of the flesh, Hebrews 12:9. Honor thy natural father. This is so necessary a duty that Philo the Jew placed the fifth commandment in the first table, as though we had not performed our whole duty to God till we had paid this debt of honor to our natural parents. Children are the vineyard of the parents' planting, and honor done to the parent is some of the fruit of the vineyard. All right, that's the end of Roman numeral 1, which is the different kinds of fathers. Roman numeral 2, children are to show honor to their parents. Number 1, by reverential esteem of their persons, they must give them a civil veneration. Therefore, when the apostle speaks of fathers of our bodies, he speaks also of giving them reverence, Hebrews 12:9. This veneration or reverence must be shown, number 1, inwardly, by fear mixed with love. You shall fear every man his mother and his father, Leviticus 19:3. In the commandment, the father is named first, but here the mother is first named, partly to put honor upon the mother, because by reason of many weaknesses incident to her sex, she is apt to be more slighted by children. and partly because the mother endures more for the child. And number two, reverence must be shown to parents outwardly, both in word and gesture. In word, and that either in speaking to parents or speaking of them. In speaking of parents, children must speak respectfully. Ask on, my mother, and King Solomon to his mother Bathsheba, 1 Kings 2:20. In speaking of parents, children must speak honorably. So I guess it was speaking to parents, speak respectfully, speaking of them, speak honorably. They ought to speak well of them if they deserve well. Her children arise up and call her blessed, Proverbs 31:28. And in case a parent betrays weakness and indiscretion, the child should make the best of it and, by wise apologies, cover his parents' nakedness. So in word and then in gesture, children are to show reverence to their parents by submissive behavior, by uncovering the head and bending the knee. Joseph, though a great prince and his father had grown poor, bowed to him and behaved himself as humbly as if his father had been the prince and he the poor man. Genesis 46:29. King Solomon, when his mother came to him, rose off his throne and bowed himself unto her. 1 Kings 2:19. Among the Lacedaemonians, if a child had carried himself arrogantly or saucily to his father, it was lawful for the father to appoint whom he would to be his heir. Oh, how many children are far from thus giving reverence to their parents. They despise their parents. They carry themselves with such pride and neglect toward them that they are ashamed to religion and bring their parents' gray hairs with sorrow to the grave. Cursed be he that setteth light by his father or his mother, Deuteronomy 27:16. If all that set light by their parents are cursed, how many children in our age are under a curse? If such as are disrespectful to parents live to have children, their own children will be thorns in their sides, and God will make them read their sins in their punishment. All right, point number two, the second way of showing honor to parents is by careful obedience. Children, obey your parents in all things, Colossians 3:20. Our Lord Christ herein set a pattern to children. He was subject to his parents, Luke 2:51. He to whom angels were subject was subject to his parents. This obedience to parents is shown three ways. Number one, in hearkening to their counsel. Hear the instruction of thy father and forsake not the law of thy mother, Proverbs 1:8. Parents are, as it were, in the room of God. If they would teach you the fear of the Lord, you must listen to their words as oracles and not be as the deaf adder or snake to stop your ears. Eli's sons hearkened not to the voice of their father, but were called sons of Belial, 1 Samuel 2:12 and 25. And as children must hearken to the counsel of their parents in spiritual matters, so in affairs which relate to this life, as in the choice of a calling and in the case of entering into marriage. Jacob would not dispose of himself in marriage, though he was 40 years old, without the advice and consent of his parents, Genesis 28:1-2. Children are, as it were, the parents' proper goods and possession, and it is a great injustice in a child to give herself away without the parents' leave. If parents should indeed counsel a child to match with one that is irreligious or popish, I think the case is plain, and many of the learned are of the opinion that here the child may have a negative voice and is not obliged to be ruled by the parent. Children are to marry in the Lord, not therefore with persons irreligious, for that is not to marry in the Lord, 1 Corinthians 7:39. Number two, obedience to parents is shown in complying with their commands. A child should be the parent's echo. When the father speaks, the child should echo back obedience. The Rechabites were forbidden by their father to drink wine, and they obeyed him and were commended for it, Jeremiah 35:14. Children must obey their parents in all things, Colossians 3:20. In things against the grain, to which they have most reluctance, they must obey their parents. I guess things they probably don't want to do. Esau would obey his father when he commanded him to fetch him venison, because it is probable he took pleasure in hunting, but refused to obey him in a matter of greater concernment in the choice of a wife. But though children must obey their parents in all things, yet it is with the limitation of things just and honest. Obey in the Lord, that is, so far as the commands of parents agree with God's commands, Ephesians 6, verse 1. If they command against God, they lose their right of being obeyed, and in this case, we must unchild ourselves. So that was the end of point two, honoring our parents by careful obedience. And point three, honor is to be shown to parents in relieving their wants or lacks, things they lack. Joseph cherished his father in his old age, Genesis 47, verse 12. It is but paying a just debt. Parents brought up children when they were young, and children ought to nourish their parents when they are old. The young storks, by an instinct of nature, bring meat to the old ones when, by reason of age, they are not able to fly. Pliny calls it a law of the storks. The memory of Aeneas was honored for carrying his aged father out of Troy when it was on fire. I have read of a daughter whose father, being condemned to be starved to death, who gave him in his prison suckle with her own breasts, which being known to the governors, procured his freedom. Such children, or monsters, shall I say, are to blame, who are ashamed of their parents when they are old and fallen into decay, and when they ask for bread, give them a stone. When houses are shut up, we say the plague is there. When children's hearts are shut up against their parents, the plague is there. Our blessed Savior took great care for his mother. When on the cross, he charged his disciple John to take her home to him as his mother and see that she wanted or lacked nothing, John 19, 26 and 27. All right, and that is the that's the end of Roman numeral 2, which was children are to show honor to their parents. And we're going to go ahead and stop there, and Lord willing, next time go on to the reasons why children should honor their parents. But until then, go in a proper behavior in these relations as unto the Lord, as the Lord would have it. And Lord willing, we'll talk to you again soon.